Miriam Meets on RTE Radio 1 with Miriam O'Callaghan.
My guests this morning are brothers and they're from West Kerry. They come from a family steeped in Irish traditional music and the Irish language. They're late bloomers in that both have embarked on second careers as professional musicians. Brendan Begley was a secondary school teacher who left teaching after 20 years. He's now a professional solo musician, singing and playing the accordion. He performs with his children in the Begleys and he's also worked with the boys from the Loch and Beganish. Seamus Begley was a farmer who played the accordion but has now carved out a career as a traditional musician and singer. He has worked with musicians from all walks of life, including Alton, Steve Cooney and Jim Murray, as well as performing as a solo artist. He recently joined Teda. This weekend, he has been awarded the prestigious Tichy Caha Grotham Kyole Singer of the Year Award. You're both very welcome. Thanks. Congratulations, Seamus, on your award.
Thanks, Miriam. I heard you saying bloomers there. The last time I heard bloomers was from my grandmother.
Really?
She wore bloomers all the time.
Are they knickers, bloomers?
Well, they'd cover
large parts
probably
of your
they covered the whole lot of you. They were so big and so long.
I could do with them today.
They covered
the
multitude.
It wasn't the G-string anyway.
You left out a very important musician there as well, Tim Eady from Kent, who was BBC Two's Musician of the Year last year.
Fantastic.
I've been playing with him for ages as well. We have a CD together called Disgrace Notes. So
wonderful, that's very
important.
He'll
be listening to this now in London. He'd be highly insulted if we don't mention
well,
him.
Well, I'm really glad you mentioned him. And we'll mention him again later on, yeah, Tim, okay? Yeah. But look, you're going to play live for me today. What's the first piece you're going to do? Accordion, the Morris Scanlon jigs? Tell me about this.
Yeah, I remember first time I heard it, Morris Scanlon came over to us. Seamus had bought this kind of mini, kind of a van car type of thing in the early 70s and he wanted to lift to the midnight mass, so Morris Candle came in. And
who's Morris Candle then?
Well, he was a neighbour about a mile away in Ballyhaw. He wanted to lift.
He played a mouth organ and yeah. That was the only tune he played.
Yeah, we gave him a drop of whiskey and he starts playing this tune. That was the first time we'd heard the tune.
And he called this Port on the Vand. Port so the he Vand, must have yeah. heard it from a band
yeah.
somewhere.
The band in the Wren used to play it.
Out in the Wren, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I feel like we should be in a pub and dingle at the moment listening to that.
We should be.
But listen, tell me about your backgrounds. First of all, you're Seamus. You're the eldest. No, you're the eldest boy in your family, aren't you?
I'm the eldest boy in the family. Yeah. There were four girls before me and my poor father was in a bad way. he was a farmer and he wanted somebody to...
An heir to the ranch.
An heir to the ranch. To milk the cows, and even though the girls were great.
Where did you come in, the family, Brendan?
I'm the youngest.
How many of you are there?
Four men and five women.
Where did you grow up?
In a place called Ballybuck, in about 7.5 miles west of Dingle. Life was completely different then than it is now. There were so many people around the place. There was about 14 people in the house at the time. There was my father, my mother, my grandfather, my grandmother, 9 of us, and the workman. And you could imagine the hullabaloo in the house.
And don't forget
that.
The 15th member who had to be brought in with her 14 kids.
Who's that?
There you are. You forgot about that, didn't you? We had a sow.
Oh, Jesus.
Who would have 14,
very important.
Who would have 14 bonnets, and the warmest place in the house had to be for the sow, for the little bonnets who were born. And there was no electricity. There was no infrared lamps. There was no heating at all. And we had to share the house because they were... They were more important. They made money. You know, they were the breadwinner.
And a pig is a very clean animal.
Yeah, I remember her in the kitchen. She used to stand up and wait at the door for someone to open the door for her to go out. Yeah. She was house trained without
That's
being
so nice.
Naturally house trained. You know.
And did you want for anything when you were growing up? No, there probably was there much money. No,
there was no money, but there was no need for money
yeah,
because
money
we didn't
yeah. come
need
into
money.
It. Yeah, we grew all our everybody was organic at the time, and we had our own milk. We had our own milk, we had our own meat, we had our own...
We had our own turf. There was no turbo diesels in them days. Yeah. We had a pony and trap and a pony and cart, which brought us to mass, and there was no need for money.
Yeah, but 14 mouths to feed was a lot as well, three or four times a day.
As you say, that's a lot of mouths to feed. So they probably worked hard, did they?
Everybody worked. We'd have to milk cows in the morning before we go to school, and we'd be straight into the field after coming home, picking spuds or picking stones out of the fields and pulling buchalan bees, the ragworts that are plaguing the scenery.
Boredom never came into it. We were never bored. We were just always doing something, and you could repair everything. We were building walls, we were fixing chairs, you had to multitask really to live in that environment. But I just got the tail end of the time when they didn't have electricity and when they didn't have running water.
I'm thinking of my poor mother who had 9 kids and a child every year, and had to do housework, had to milk cows, had to do her day's work like anybody, as if
she used to say,
she'd nothing else to do.
A man's work is from dawn till dusk, but a woman's work is never done. That was one of her
catchphrases. Yeah. Were you spoiled as the youngest? Was he spoiled?
Well, of course, Shane? He was spoiled.
She'd have to spoil me.
Look at him.
Me.
I remember the night he was born.
I can't apologize for being spoilable.
I remember the night he was born, and all our babies came from the Strand.
Yeah,
my Pad Fatsconel was the fellow who worked for us. And he used to go to the Strand. He was nearly bringing back a baby every day because there was 9 of us. But this fellow was brought in the middle of the night anyway. And we were all dying to see him. And we were all in the kitchen. I don't know how we were fooled into thinking that the baby we
came
never saw him coming in the door, but he appeared in the room, and we don't know where he came from.
the version I heard of the story was at the hall in Mariach was open that night.
It was the dance hall.
And it was reopened that night in the first and the last day of October 1955. And then my father was called for, that is, my mother was giving birth to me. So he came home, and Dr. Scully was there as well. And the two of them were sitting at both ends of the fire with a bottle of whiskey. And my grandmother says to my mother, "We'll manage him ourselves.
We'll manage
without
him." She didn't bother.
They brought the baby down, and the two lads were half drunk each side of the fire.
The doctor.
They were in labour with a bottle of Paddy.
And your poor mother with no epidurals.
And she'd love a drop of whiskey, I'm sure. I wonder what she probably would have had a couple of glasses.
Yeah.
She liked her brandy.
Probably to ease the pain.
Ease the pain, of course.
Yeah. That was the anaesthetic.
Yeah.
When you think of it, one of our children was 14 pounds when she was born.
One of your children, one of my sisters.
I don't want to say it because she'd kill me.
She'd kill you now. Yeah. 14 pounds.
14 pounds.
That is a massive baby.
Yeah. That's a massive baby, yeah.
Is she still a massive woman?
She certainly is. If you got a belt from her, to be worse than any belt from Mike Tyson.
You'll end up in the baskets.
On you as the eldest son, you know, to take over the farm always?
Well, I had no interest in school for a start. I was useless in school. I had no interest. I just could not concentrate on anything in school. And I left school at 14 years of age, and I couldn't speak 2 words of English. I learned nothing in school.
We envied him then because he stayed home from school, and we had to go to school, and we had to go to secondary school afterwards, which was worse. And then we ended up going to, for a while, in university, stuff like that. But it was great the way we looked at it, like, geez, he's got the life of Riley on the farm, going with the pony and cart.
But was it a burden or a blessing?
Well, I was always dreaming about going to America. And, you know, we used to see people coming home from America with loads of money and loads of clean clothes, beautiful white trousers and shiny shoes and big Bonnie and jumpers that wouldn't be white for 5 minutes on our farm, because they'd be covered in, well, there was
everything,
30 cows and hens jumping up on your shoulders and you know, all kinds of pigs and bullocks. And he doesn't remember any of that. He was too young. He was spoiled.
That was a kind of a pastime, throwing the hens at one another.
So what did you do? You became a teacher, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, I finished. I didn't do a TAFE for my leaving cert. The next thing, I got an interview to go to the PE college in Limerick, and I found it very strange. I remember being called the first morning in English, by the woman from the digs. And after about 3 weeks, I had my bags packed. I was going to come home, but the fellow I was sharing with, he says, "Try it out till Christmas," which I did do, and I just hung on then. Then I went into teaching, and I was a teacher until 1997, which meant that I went to school at the age of 5, and I was in the kind of a cog of the wheel of the Department of Education for almost 37 years. Jesus, I just hated that. And I actually got very sick. That's why I left. I was threatened with cancer. My throat just faded away. I had pains. I couldn't sleep at night. And I went to this surgeon eventually in Tralee, and he says, we know what you have. We don't know what the cause of it is, but we've no cure for you. And I remember saying to the local doctor, Dr. O'Shea, God rest him, I says, he says, you have to, I said, I have to cure it myself. You said it now. The day I stopped preaching, the pain went away.
Probably stress.
It was stress. Yeah. And just being, it was like being in jail. But I remember that my last day when I finished in Tralee, I went into this restaurant and there was somebody left the paper. And I don't read the stars, and there was this thing on the stars and a scorpion, and it says, follow your heart. A moment of madness is better than a life of logic. So that's my excuse for madness.
You went into music. And we'll go back to that, actually. But you both loved music growing up, didn't you? Like that dance hall evening, Mariach, that was important to your childhood.
It really was. And it gave us all an incentive to play, to learn a tune, because the younger you learned, the younger you went to the dance to play, because you were useful. There was a job for you if you played. And we discovered that we used to play there 7 nights a week.
And what did you both play? What did you play, Seamus?
Played the accordion. That's all that was in the house, you know. Yeah.
And you, Brendan?
Yeah, just the accordion. I remember being the youngest. I had one tune, and Michael having two, and John having three, and Breed having 15. I said, geez, I'll never have 15 tunes. This kind of way. And then
there was competition with the tunes.
There was, yeah.
Do you remember your debut in the dance hall, like the first time you would have both played there? Do you, Seamus?
I remember. Yeah? I was still in school at probably 12 or 13 years of age, and Richard Lomarachu from Cork used to have a course of Gael in Fionnach every July. And one of the students were staying. We actually had students, would you believe, staying in the house
as well as
7 or 8 of them.
Seven. Where in the name of God did we put them? I have no idea. One of the students told the teacher that I was able to play the accordion, so I got the job playing for the. It was fantastic. I got bottles of orange and everything thrown at me.
But you said, Brendan, it was a bit like Carnegie Hall as far as you're concerned.
Well, if you got to play in Mariach Hall, it was the equivalent of going to Carnegie Hall. It was for us the Carnegie Hall of West Kerry.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I played there was 12 and a half, and the drummer, Aloysius Kavanagh, couldn't come that night, and you said to me you had to play the drums. I'd never even seen drums. So he brought home the drums, and I was sitting behind them, and then straddled like this and walloping every other way. And I loved it for the first 3 years.
And make as much noise as possible. That's what I told him.
Yeah.
And then after that, I started listening to horse lips, and I'd be losing the time. And then, Jesus, the looks I'd get to slow down. But it was brilliant for the first 3 years. Second 3 was okay, but the last 3, I absolutely hated it because I was tied up there every night. Like, and all my friends were down the floor dancing. Yeah. And then my father down at the door, of course, I mean, he'd be watching wherever you move, like if you were who you were going out with and everything else.
Oh, yeah. And you remember, you were delighted when somebody broke into the hall and stole the drums.
Stole the drums.
We never found out who stole that. I think it was himself.
With Brendan himself.
And he buried them somewhere.
In my mind, it was.
But if we're going to take the next piece of music, which is Slides.
We would have got those from Johnny Leary, wouldn't we?
Yeah. Who's Johnny Leary?
Johnny O'Leary, the famous Sliabh Lochra man, played accordion and had every. I'm sure he had every slide and every polka and every.
He was a pupil Kerry part
tune
of
that ever was.
But how do they go, these slides?
If we did the whole treat, it would be here all day. So, I mean, I see you looking at your watch there.
No, I'm not.
But the last one was, I think, is one of my favourite slides of all time. We learned them all from Johnny O'Leary, of course. Where would we be without Johnny?
Fantastic. I like that just in itself, but look, you're going to go over now and do them for me on the accordions as well. Wonderful. I love those slides. What's his name? Johnny O'Leary again?
Johnny, the famous Johnny O'Leary, the greatest exponent, I suppose, of Sliabh Lochra music and the biggest rogue that ever picked up an accordion. He had as many tunes as he had as much roguery in him.
Rogues are good, though.
Roguery.
Yeah, oh, great. Great. We like rogues.
You never left him without a smile on your face. Oh. And if he saw that you were anywhere down, he'd you hear this one. He'd tell you a story, and he was just a great character. And the dancers loved him. His music was like a metronome. He never speeded up too much, but he could play both ways. Like, but
when you both grew up, did you only speak Irish?
Yeah.
That's how we spoke, Irish, yeah.
But this my is father kind of unusual had, for us to be speaking English here. No,
it is. My mother and father had great English. He was a tyrant when it came to diction. We were afraid to speak English in his company. Because we
mightn't be perfect enough.
It wouldn't be perfect at all. Learning it.
But is it your grandmother used to call you James?
Our grandmother called us English names, you know. I think she came from an age that Irish was banned.
Yeah.
She wasn't allowed to speak Irish in the school. She came from a family 5 miles from MLA, Ferris from MLA. She spoke better English than Irish, you know. Most of the time she'd be speaking English to us.
Yeah, and they were preparing you for the time that you'd have to emigrate because there was no place. There were, yeah, they were so saying, many people yeah. there.
That language is no good to you outside of here, so you better learn something.
Yeah.
I mean, we couldn't even go into Dinkle without being laughed at, you know.
If you spoke Irish only.
If we spoke
only,
Irish, they'd be laughing.
Isn't that terrible? Yeah. Well, that was just the times.
Yeah, I remember Jimmy Towell telling me, neighbour over the road, he went to England in 1966, and he said, I couldn't even order my breakfast when he was over in London.
Yeah,
because he hadn't a word of English, and to avoid that, then they gave us all English. I'd be Brendan, he'd be James, and
a lot of those people who went away without a word of English, when they came back to live, they hated the language. They insisted on their kids not speaking Irish. They insisted that language is no good to you. It would make a fool of you.
They took it out in the language, really.
They took it out in the language because they were ridiculed in America and in places. Yeah.
But you can understand it from their point of view.
Of course you could.
I remember being inside the school, and just the bruiser, the teacher, Jim Fitz, we had, and he had the map of Ireland, and he pointing out the places in Ireland. That was the first time I heard that actually everybody in Ireland didn't speak Irish. And then it was a shock to the system to think that in order to live in this country, I have to learn another language. I remember that I was probably about 7 or 8.
And most of the old lads, you know, that didn't have English are gone. Now, there's one or two left all the time, but there was one fella. He was a great character. He'd be speaking half English, half Irish. He'd be back in Ballydavid and he'd say, is that a Callinog down there, a snav? Shoot us 2-4 to be snav today. So it would have been a great way of learning
great
Irish.
Mixture, people, you know.
I know when we see people from Poland coming in with the same kind of English, so we take no notice of them. But for us, it was very embarrassing to be speaking like that.
Yeah.
That's why we started drinking. Not for the love of it.
Do you remember when electricity, for instance, came?
Oh, God, will I ever forget it. 1962, the electricity came. My God almighty. And we had a switch on the wall that we could just touch and turn on the light and turn off again and turn it on again and off again with no match. You didn't have to have a match. We hadn't matches half the time. We used to be the carryman into the fire and light the candles and light the... We had the lamps. We had the tilly lamps, which were good.
Yeah.
But you'd have to fill them with gas and you'd have to make sure the mantle was right. But Jesus, going over to the wall.
It was magic.
Touching a switch.
It was.
We
magic.
Were
magic.
In heaven. And the place was so bright. My mother was disgusted because she saw all the dirt in the house when the light was turned.
Yeah. Give your mother a heart.
We had to paint. We had to paint the house. Probably every room when the light was...
The smell of paint all over the place.
And what about things like radio or television? Can you remember when you got either or both of those?
I remember when we got the first radio. It was an old... there were two batteries. There was a wet battery and a dry battery. And I remember my father going into Dingle to recharge. Was it to fill the wet battery or something? You'd have to buy, I think you'd have to buy the dry battery and fill the wet one. I remember that.
Television.
I remember our neighbour next door had the television first. Sean Thomasheen, Kennedy's, came home from England, loaded with money, as we thought. He built a house and he had a television and he had a car that never started. And we used to have to push it every Sunday morning. It gave us our muscles. It was an old Ford Prefect and it was a terror to start because, of course, the dampness down there. And we'd have great crack pushing this car every Sunday morning. We were the starters.
And the first time we saw television, we couldn't understand it. It was just...
It
was in English.
Yeah,
and we learned our English off the television from watching it. And watching cowboys like, you remember, Virginian, Bat Masterson. It was black and white, of course. We just got playing cowboys and Indians, and our favourite time was during a full moon to be playing cowboys because everything was black and white. It was like, as we'd seen it on television, it wasn't the same fun as playing it by day at all.
We had seen films, though, first, I think, before television, down in this fellow from Dingle.
I'd never seen that, though.
The fellow from Dingle came from...
Connors from Dingle.
He rented an old house in Fionnuch, and he was showing movies. He was showing movies 2-3 times a week. God almighty, the place used to be packed. And it was a shilling or something to get in. It was...
So exciting.
It was unbelievable. I know one old lad one night, he was up, sitting up near the screen, and he saw the horses coming towards him. The horse was galloping towards him, and he was moving back and moving back. He thought the horses were going to...
So jump out.
He took off his cap, and he just trying to... Threw the cap at the screen, trying to stop the horses. Yeah.
The nice thing for you, though, Seamus, is that it wasn't until not that long ago that you went from farming to music. I mean, did you ever think you would make the shift from being a full-time farmer to being what you now are, which is a full-time musician?
I used to dream about, I used to be in the cowhouse singing away, and I'd be dreaming about being on stage and an audience listened to me, and the audience was 20 cows.
And good practice.
There'd be no response from them except maybe if you didn't step out of the way.
And what would you sing to them?
I think my favourite song at the time was The Shores of Mary Kay, because that was my dream, to go to America. I'm bidding farewell to the land of my youth and the home that I love so well, to the mountains grand of my own native land. I'll be bidding them all farewell. With an aching heart, I will bid them adieu. But I could not understand an aching heart. I'll bid them adieu. I'd be delighted to bid them adieu. I wanted to rewrite that song. For tomorrow I'll sail far away, o'er the raging foam, far to seek a home on the shores of America. That was one of my favourite songs.
But you know, it's so sweet. You didn't give up on your dream. I mean, there's other farmers who would have stood singing to their 20 cows, and it might never have happened. But in your case, it did happen.
Yeah, I see them there all the time, farming.
Yeah.
It's a 24-hour-a-day job. I remember when I started playing music with Cooney, we went all over the country playing music, and some nights I would have to come back from Cork at 2 o'clock in the morning and feed 6 or 7 sick calves, and I'd be there till morning dosing them and looking after them and getting back into my car again and driving back down to Cork to do the next gig. And that was... I didn't mind it at all because, you know, it was work. And when you're a farmer, playing music was not work. My God, it's not work. And
but farming is very hard work.
It's a never-ending job and a thankless job, because you're if you're not there 24 hours, if there was 30 hours in the day, you'd still find something to do.
Was it a loyalty to your parents in a way? Is it true that you didn't sell all the cows until both of your parents had passed on?
Yeah, they didn't want to give me the farm because they knew I hated the cows and I couldn't wait to see them getting out of my sight. And I was even thinking of selling the land, but they were very slow to hand it over. But the thing is, if you're a farmer, you don't sell the sacred cow. That's the last move. So I begrudgingly held on to them. And at the time, you know, they were being neglected and music was being neglected. So farmers wouldn't call me a farmer and musicians wouldn't call me a musician, because I wasn't concentrating.
One or the other.
I used to be away up in Dublin playing music, and there'd be a cow calving in the field, and you'd come home to a dead calf, you know, My father used to always say, "Farn the bohain, fen the hittable," which means the owner of the cow has to be holding her tail all the time.
Right.
Almost all the time. Otherwise, because I remember my father, he bought every cow. He had a great eye for cows, and he always had the best milkers, and he knew every cow's personality. He knew the one that was going to have trouble calving. He knew the one that wouldn't have trouble calving. And most farmers are like that.
Did you know he wanted to sell the cows and go into music full time, Brendan?
Well, he hated dealing with the cattle. milking the cows or anything like that.
I remember this fella going after the Willie Clancy week in the middle of July and he laughing at me up to my eyes and fucking silage and cows.
And
he said, "Thomas, old dear Willie Clancy." Oh, I said, "How's Sailor?" I said, "How's Sailor?" He says to me, "Kay, I'm out with you. Who's keeping it from you?" So I thought about that for 10 years. Who's keeping it from me? I'm keeping it from
you. You really
me.
Do have to do that. Like if there's something wrong in your life, just go and do something about it. And it was harder for him really because he got the farm and but he loved being on tractors. He didn't like to be near cows at all. I remember when he'd walk into the cow house, all the cows would start shitting because they were frightened of him. Like they hated the sight of
they
him.
They hated him. They hated me because
but give him a tractor and repair
he thought
a
you were
tractor.
Going to start singing again.
Yeah. No. I remember when Mary, my wife, came from. She was born in Kerry but lived in Glasnevin, came from Glasnevin and never had seen a cow in her life. And she started milking 30 cows, morning and evening. The cows were delighted because she was so gentle with them and she just said, "Fall them off, stay out of it, stay out of the cows." I was delighted. I was delighted. I'd go in and I'd create havoc so that she'd throw me out.
Yeah. But you really loved the tractors as well.
Oh, like I loved the tractors. Yeah, that was, I got my first tractor in 1971, 700 pounds. Matthew Ferguson 135 and it was... God almighty, it was...
You loved it?
Oh, God almighty.
What is it about men and their tractors?
Boys with their ties. Look at them today with their iPhones and their iPads, for God's sake. And they're not talking to anyone. At least if you're in a tractor, you'll meet a farmer and you'll talk to him.
I was the opposite. I just wanted to go to sea. I just went fishing for summers and just... I think being out in the open sea is the best place in the world. Go out. For me, everybody has a spot. And for me, the spot is out Brandon Creek and sit in an ivoque there at a certain distance where you only see the cliffs and you don't see any houses or anything like that. It's the Louvre couldn't compare with the art of that. Like, and
it's beautiful.
And you're away from everybody. And I suppose for me, when I used to come home, having been in Parnell Square for 18 years and teaching day in, day out, I just wanted to get away from all people. Like, so the first chance I got, I was
teaching Dublin brats.
But I did have a good time in Dublin. I met a lot of musicians in Dublin. There was nothing wrong with Dublin, but I just hated being there.
Yeah.
And I moved home in 95 and just my life changed completely then. And you get your freedom from making those decisions. Like.
And actually you got your freedom, Seamus, by selling the cows and now this weekend you've won that incredible award, the Grotham Cow, for you've a beautiful voice.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I do.
What are you looking for?
I'm looking for you to sing for me.
We were never used to getting compliments at home, so if anybody gave me a compliment at home, they'd be looking for something. Yeah. This woman in America came to me one time, she says, you got a beautiful voice, she says. When you sing, I cry. I said, "I'm sorry to hear that." "Oh no," she says, "it's good."
All I want you to do is to sing for me now. You're going to sing a song, aren't you?
I'm going to sing this little song that I learned from, probably learned it in school. I learned it from the later of Tomás O'Shea, who died very young of cancer, 29. And he was a beautiful singer. He was Dáithí O'Shea's uncle.
Okay.
A really nice, beautiful singer. And... Elan Hunanoir. It was written by the Spalpeen, a man from Smerwick, Ardnacanna, who went off to America and never came home. But he wrote these beautiful songs about his home place. This was one of them. Elan Hunanoir. O yerim sheri sas seri yang rast sen ni vel khonin snuf laishin gohand me hort shal risht mar raus hen vado Kudin malton ake lelan hunanoir.
Oh, come back over. That's really beautiful, Seamus. And it's Tomás Dainín you
Tomás
heard that.
Tomás Dainín was his
name. So sad he died at 29.
God, he died. He used to drive the truck for Kerry Co-op. And he was so proud. He was so proud of that truck, the poor man.
Well, look, we'll dedicate that to his memory. Brendan, tell us about, you made the change from being a teacher to music, but you did it because you were probably stressed being a teacher, were you?
Yeah, well, I was definitely, I knew that I never really wanted to be a teacher. I came to Dublin, I said, maximum 2 years, and 18 years passed. And I remember I used to come in Dorset Street, and there was flats there, and there were these young lads playing around the place. But by the time they left, I left it. Those kids had young kids themselves. And I just really got very sick then, and I'm kind of mad at myself that I didn't leave of my own accord, that my body more or less gave up on me. But it's a very hard thing to do. I had four children and I had a mortgage and I was the sole earner to pay. And, you know, it's very hard to walk away from that.
It's very difficult to walk away because you've all those responsibilities.
It's the same as the farmer selling his cow. You don't sell your livelihood, you know.
But at least if you could sell the farm, you had something to show for it. You had so many couple of thousand. But you walked away from your teaching and your hands are hanging like. And
you just remember that musicians were laughed at as well. They were laughed at in them days.
It wasn't a good career move to leave a permanent and pensionable job and just go playing music. Yeah. And it just happened then. I told you earlier that when I finished off, I read my stars and it said, "A moment of madness is better than a life of logic." That was my last day ever teaching. So the following morning, the phone rang at 20 to 11 and I was annoyed because I wanted to sleep. My first day out of work in 20 years. 2nd of September, and the feckin' phone rang, and I picked it up, and who was it? But Dave Richardson, the boys of Loch. Christie's left the band. Could you help us out? So that was the start for me. I wouldn't go back teaching now. Like I just simply wouldn't.
Talking about teachers. I mean, I remember my father, my uncle Mick was a teacher, and my father was telling me, "Head if you hit points to me."
Yeah.
He was making £80 a month. In 19, what year was that? God, when I was 10 years of age, that was probably 1960. That was huge money. A farmer wouldn't see £80 together. And he was finished every day at 3 o'clock.
So it was a fantastic job.
It was the best job in the world to have.
But we are very, very lucky at the stages of our lives. Yeah. I mean, we started off kind of playing music together and cutting sides and everything else, and then we both went our completely different ways. And now we're kind of meeting up again, on different airports and stuff
We haven't been found out yet.
Yeah.
They used to say you can fool some of the people some of the time. We're fooling most of the people most of the time.
Nobody's right, Brendan. It's such extraordinary good luck. Now, you make your own luck, I think, a lot of the time in life, but together, you're now doing music, singing together, doing everything you wanted to do in your lives.
Yeah, and my parents' generation didn't have that. My Uncle Jim and Mick and all of them, but at the end of the day, I suppose, if we were still stuck in what we were doing, we'd still be playing music and we'd still be singing. And the only change in our lives is that the complication of doing the day job, of having to do the job, is out of the way.
Yeah. I never in my wildest dreams thought I would be at 64 years of age going around the world without a cow or a calf or a chick or a child.
I had to bring the cow with you all over the world.
playing music, singing songs, telling lies and getting paid for it.
And enjoying yourself.
And enjoying it no end.
But if you're going to sing a song together for me now, what's this song?
It's a song that my mother used to sing and her mother sang it as well. It's a song in English. Well, see, we learned songs in English and in Irish. My mother sang English songs and Irish songs.
We loved English songs more than anything because we didn't hear them that often, you know.
Yeah.
My mother used to love Marty Robbins and Jim Reeves and Bing Crosby. She loved all those. Jim Reeves. I never forget when he died, Jim Reeves. My mother was broken-hearted.
Yeah. 1964, was it?
65. I remember it well, yeah.
So what's the song now you're going to sing your mother liked?
It's Buachalín Down, My True Love, He Dwells in the Mountain.
Sure I long for a home on the mountain, far away from the dust of the town, by the side of a low-tuning fountain, in the arms of my Buachalín Down. I'm sure when she was singing that was a dream to get out of that cow shit and get away from that tyrant of a husband she had and the 9 kids that were dragging and pulling at her for poor woman. She'd have a couple of brandies and after a couple of brandies she'd say, "Why don't you ask me to sing?" Because she'd never sing unless she was asked.
But and did she have a lovely voice,
Mum? She had a beautiful voice.
Do you think she was frustrated in her life?
Oh, I don't. I know she was frustrated in her life, and so was he. He was also a great singer, and I remember him when he was the age that I am now. I thought he was an old man, and I joined a band last year to go to America. I can imagine what his answer would be if he was asked, "Would you like to join a band to go to America?"
He'd love it.
First of all, he wouldn't get into an airplane. He wouldn't go up to the top of the mountain of his own. It was a part of his own land he never saw because he was frightened of heights.
Even though he was born 5 feet away from the cliffs in Ballyfell.
That's
Ballydavid.
The thing, Ballydavid, yeah.
Yeah, people had harder lives then, though, didn't they? Like, they couldn't realise the dreams that you both have realised in your lives.
Yeah. But my mother used to call marriage Srahar na Hennishe. The
Kaddishin.
The straddle of
Anish. Disaster.
Of disaster.
The straddle of disaster.
Did she really?
She did, yeah.
Srahar na Hennishe.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that she felt almost as like it.
It really tied her down. Like, and I remember... I mean,
and there was no divorce, there was no way out. You're there and that's it. Like it or lump it.
Yeah. My grandfather, Mickey Begley, when he heard word he was in early 80s and he heard that his wife had died, he hopped up off the chair and he says, "Christ, I'm single again."
He was in bed.
And he may have been very happy in his marriage life, but that was, Jesus,
this
that
is
was
probably the moment
feeling,
he waited for his life.
So tell me about your career now, Seamus. What have you been doing and what's ahead of you?
Did you call it a career?
Yeah. the lovely life you lead. Because you've just been in Paris, are we in France?
I have to thank Oisín Mac Dermida. He's the best man that I ever came across.
Who's Oisín Mac Dermida?
Oisín Mac Dermida is a great fiddle player who has formed a group called Teda 10 years ago. That's the boy band that I joined last year. And they're dragging me all over the world, to America nearly every month.
And you can hear them screaming. And
what makes me laugh is they call it work. They call it work. Lads, if you want work,
go to the
I'll
farm
bring you
the
down. I'll bring you down to Kerry for a night. And I guarantee you, one night, and then you'd be delighted to go to America and sit at airports for 10 or 12 hours or whatever it is. I don't mind it at all. It's... I have my clean clothes on. There's no sign of cockbo. There's no smell of cockbo. We were always brought up with this pludder, which is muck, and to get out of that, and never have to wear dirty clothes again.
You really disliked it, didn't you?
Oh, I hated it. But what could I do? I hated it. I remember my sister Eileen went to Australia in 19. Oh, she went to Australia in 1969 and she'd be writing letters to me about the beautiful sunshine over there, and she was sick of the sunshine. She was sick of it. And she'd be writing to me and I'd be writing back to her. And plodder and cock, I guess an enisha. Muck, shite, and enisha is disaster. Well, what's the proper word for enisha? Enisha is... I can't think of the name for now.
It's not good anyway.
But I never forget, I went to Australia in 1988 and... God almighty, when I left Kerry, it was freezing cold. I had left 40 cows in the yard with poor old Joe Foppa. I had to look after them. I landed in Australia with my winter clothes and they were all there at the airport to meet me in Melbourne in their T-shirts, in their shorts, in their sandals. The sunshine, imagine. I walked into the bank in my shorts and sandals. If I was seen in Dingle walking into the bank in my shorts, I'd be sent straight to Killarney.
They'd be the ambulance waiting for you outside.
The white coats would be outside waiting.
And I was the opposite. I just couldn't wait to go home. And when I went home the summer, I used to try and spend three full months without even going east of Dingle.
Do you both live there now in West Kerry?
We do, yeah. But it's a wonderful place. Like, I mean, I hate it because I couldn't live anywhere else. There's a certain draw in West Kerry always there. And...
Yeah, it's great to come back to. It's great to come back to because you're in America. If you go to America for a month and you go into those horrible pubs that they have in America with 20 televisions and jukeboxes and everybody's screaming and shouting to be heard, and they ask you for an ID at the door. They ask me at 60 years of age for an ID. And I don't know whether to take it as a compliment or an insult. And you come home and you go into Curran's pub there, and the man of the house, James Curran, sings songs and he fills the most gorgeous Guinness porter in the whole world, and there's nothing in the world to beat that when you come back after being in America for a month. And some people tell me, "Oh, it's a long drive from Kerry to Dublin. How do you a long drive from Kerry to Dublin?" I said, "I can sit in a car and listen to the radio and I don't have to look behind me once. I'd be sitting on a tractor for 15-20 hours a day with a crick in my neck looking back
Still in the one field.
Ready to get a heart attack if something broke. All my money was behind me in this bloody machine, and if I hit a stone, I was a poor man. And this to me is a holiday with pay. And I'm on a world tour, chauffeur driven around the world.
So you must wake up some mornings and pinch yourself.
I really do. I have to pinch myself a couple of times.
But you deserve it.
I'm not sure. A lot of people would say...
But with a voice like that, like you've won this T.G. Cahir award because you deserve
it. They had to
it.
Give it to somebody. I forgot. They have to pick on somebody every year.
We're hopeless.
You'll probably get it next year. You'll probably get it.
They haven't heard me sing. But Brendan, in your case as well, do you feel incredibly happy as we come to the end of the programme that you're now doing music full time in your life?
If I come to Dublin, if I hang around Panel Square, I just get down in the dumps again because I'm trapped in that spot again. Mm. I never realised that I hated being trapped as much until I got out. And it is a really wonderful life.
Right, we're going to end on some polkas. Seamus and Brendan, it's been my pleasure having you both. My thanks on sound today to Richard McCullough, to my producer Eileen Herron. We'll be here at the same time next Sunday. Congratulations again, Seamus, on winning your Grotham Keogh Award. And if you want, you can tune in tonight to T.G. Cahir at 9:30, where you'll see all the award winners, and it should be a great concert.
Thank you, ma'am.
Miriam Meets on RTE Radio 1. Listen back or podcast at rte.ie/radioplayer.